Thank you so much for joining Dental Marketing Theory, a podcast by Gary Bird. In today's episode, Gary talks with Jeremy Krell, a partner at Revere Partners. Gary and Jeremy break down the financial questions you have about dentistry, and some of the answers might surprise you. As always, please make sure to like, subscribe, share, and leave a comment, as all of those things really help to get the word out about Dental Marketing Theory. Hope you enjoy today's show.
All right, we are live here with Dr. Jeremy. I'm super excited for this podcast today. And if you are listening, please go and leave a review on the podcast, either on Apple or Spotify or wherever you're listening. It really, really helps us out. I know this is white noise. I know you're ignoring it, and I know you're not going to do it, but I'm asking you very, very nicely, please go do it. The rest of this podcast is free. And if you go and leave a review and you don't like it, I'll give you back your money. So that's really important. Thanks so much for doing that. So, all right. We're here with Dr. Jeremy, and you are the managing partner at Revere Partners, and I'm going to try to explain what you guys do, but you do a lot of cool stuff, and I'd love for you to tell me what I got right, what I got wrong. So you help investors and founders pair to start tech companies in dental.
Yeah, Gary, first of all, thank you for having me on. Honored to be here. And Revere Partners is the first and only venture capital fund that invests exclusively in oral health technology. So we are looking at all the different cool oral health technologies, from software to devices and therapeutics to consumer products to fintech and everything else in the dental space on the technology side, and diligencing it and investing in it.
So you work on both sides, though, just to be clear. So you work with the investors, so those that want to invest into the dental, into all these awesome tech things that sometimes are lacking in the dental space. And then, but then you also work with the founders who want to raise money to get their idea out there.
That's right. Yeah. It's sort of in that way, a two-sided platform, and very uniquely we're structured as an open fund. So investors can come to us at any time and invest. So we're always talking to and courting and suiting investors on one side. And then on the other side, we are reviewing, sourcing and diligencing those startups. And then ultimately we decide, as the general partners, where to place that capital to invest.
Got
into
it.
Which of those?
So you're open. So are most investment firms, are they usually closed? And what does that mean?
Yeah, they are. And it's a good question. So a traditional venture capital fund is closed. It spends 6, 12, 18 months raising the amount of capital that it will take in, and then it closes down. Nobody else can come in. Right? It spends the next 2-3 years or so deploying all that capital into different startups. And then the fund, you know, is just managed while those investments reach maturity. Right. So it really is closed. Only the investors that get in during that raise period can really be a part of it. But Revere, on the other hand, is open. So we have a quarterly call schedule, effectively. In other words, as each new quarter comes around, new investors can enter the fund for a period of 4 quarters or more. So we remain open because we know this is a newer area in oral health. And so we want everybody, who would like to have the possibility to get involved to be able to.
Yeah. What's the advantage to open and closed? Why would somebody do it closed? What's the advantage to doing it that way?
Yeah. Doing it closed, the advantage is raising capital always takes, time and energy. So the advantage is you've raised your amount of capital, you have it in the fund for good, and it's closed. So they don't have to think about raising money again, right?
Creates urgency too, right? Makes sure that people get in and once in a lifetime opportunity, right?
It sure does. So that's how they do it in a traditional venture capital fund. To us, we saw the advantage on our side being that we could always invite new people as they learn more about this in this space to come in. So that was super critical to us. Our structure also affords us a couple of other, really unique features. The investors stay more liquid over time. So instead of giving us one big chunk of capital up front, which they may or may not be able to do, instead they can split it up over quarters, right? The other thing is they're much more diversified in our model, where a traditional VC fund might invest in a handful of startups. Ours invests in 3 to 5 per quarter, right? So their money is going to go across a number of different startups and therefore diversify their capital.
Oh, I, yeah. I love that. I'm going to stop you right there because I may be wrong on this, but so you're investing into these companies that are within the dental industry. And I'm not saying that the companies that you're investing into can't fail, but the dental industry is pretty successful. Like the fail rate on dental offices is really, really low. And then the fail rate on these companies is probably much lower. Then when you go into tech, the fail rate's like super high, right? Like people are failing. Like, you know that I have to invest into multiple companies because the chances of all these startups all making it are slim to none. And so is that a strategy as well? Is that how you guys are approaching it, or did I miss the mark on that?
Yeah, no, this is, it's a little bit of turtle on the beach, right? Where, you know, those two turtles have to find a mate the right time of the year. They've got to come out and lay the eggs. The eggs have to be buried and stay there for a while until they hatch. Once they hatch, the little hatchlings have to get to the water without being eaten, right? And then they have to grow and survive in the water without being eaten until they reach maturity, right? There's a lot of points along that life cycle for failure, right? That's how it is in the tech space. It's an ocean. It's a giant body of lots and lots and lots of different technologies and many different forces at play, forces of nature there, so to speak, that can really affect the life cycle of the startup. In dental, it's a niche, right? And you're right. When you look at the practices in comparison to the economic environment. So, it is generally speaking pretty, nothing's 100% foolproof, but it's pretty recession resistant, as we've seen with 9/11, as we've seen in 2008, as we've seen at least twice now during the pandemic. The dental industry rebounds. People need a dentist,
yep.
Right? So for us, it kind of comes down to very simply invest in what you know. We have a team of about 75 people. And so that kind of support that we can strategic, they're all from the dental industry. So that way that we can strategically support and partner to support the startups that are in the portfolio, of which there are now 18, we really are able to kind of help assure their success even a little bit more.
So how do you end up picking like who you're going to pick? Because there's, first of all, dental's behind on a lot of technology and breaking in, and we can touch on that in a little bit. But then, so that means there's other people trying to jump in. How do you pick the right companies to make sure that you're getting with people that are going to be winners?
Yeah. So we launched the fund in early 2021. We were in stealth mode for about a year before that. So the fund's 2 to 3 years old. I remember some of our early skeptics would say, hey, deal flow is going to be the biggest problem here. How are you going to find enough dental startups, right? Sure enough, that's never been the problem. We have over 480 startups in the pipeline. We meet 2 to 3 new startups a day, right? All the creepy crawlers are coming out of the framework, right? With anything that has to do with the mouth and finding Revere, which is great. We love it.
Any NFT? Are you working on any NFT dental projects right now?
All kinds all the time. That's always happening. And then the hardest part of all has not been sourcing the startups. It's always choosing the category leaders. It's always choosing, the best investments. At the end of the day, my job as a managing partner, or, my partner included, our jobs as general partners, is to make the best investment for our investors, right? So in order to do that, sometimes we invest more than once in a category. Sometimes we invest in, the companies that have the overall best package. Maybe the technology of another company is better, but the team of a second one is more well-rounded, right? So we have to make those difficult decisions sometimes in the best possible startup, that's out there, from looking at it from, many different perspectives. So it's tough. We use a scorecard. We have scoring algorithms internally that are part of our IP that we've built, and they help us, they guide us in making predictive analytics and decisions, to invest in what we think will succeed. It's largely based on a database. We kind of put together the pitch book for oral health, and that tracks over 700 companies. We've published on that before. That really helps us to make data-driven decisions. But at the end of the day, when you're dealing with startups, a lot of it's on people and some of it's on gut, right? And so it's tried and learned over time. And in our past lives as startup operators, I think we hopefully failed and failed quickly and learned from that. And so when we bring that perspective into the investment world, it comes with having been on the operator side and kind of understanding how we think things will work or not work for a particular deal.
Do you have any companies that you were like, man, I wish we could have invested with that one. We wish we would have, and we didn't. that you kind of passed on? You don't have to give me the name if you can't, but just have you had situations like that?
We've definitely had those situations, inclusive of in dental. But you know, I'll give you some. In fact, I sometimes start my lectures out, depending on the lecture and the audience that I give, with a slide that literally shows exactly this. Here, hey, you're going to sit here for an hour and listen to me talk about investments. You should know right up front, here are the things I passed on, right? So for example, I passed on Canva, right? I thought, this is ridiculous. There's a huge market of all kinds of designers. You can find them everywhere. It's commoditized. Man,
they're beating out Photoshop, and like, they're doing damage.
They are on a rocket ship. They are absolutely crushing it. I didn't think Uber would be a thing either. If we have to be honest. So then they disrupt things and they change the landscape and they make it that way. Inside of oral health, one thing that does help us is we know a lot of the corporate side of dentistry, the manufacturers, mm-hmm. distributors, insurers, DSOs, and all the rest, right? So we kind of know what they're looking for as well. And so, we've already had an acquisition, an exit occur. We have two or three more now, I think, that are in the pipeline for acquisition. So we are pretty good at lining up investment interests with where we think the market and its strategic acquirers are going to be. Because anybody who's saying that their exit strategy is IPO today is, probably screening themselves out.
Got it. So you said one of the things that you guys are big in is fintech. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. We kind of look at fintech, and this is RCM, revenue cycle management in dentistry is a giant mess right now, right? It's kind of up for grabs, if you will. And we look at it in four different buckets of innovations. Bucket one, payments. Bucket two, financing. Bucket three, claims processing. And bucket four, insurance verification, in no particular order.
So I'm going to stop you real quick. So fintech is financial technologies, which is like everywhere. It's going to change the world. That's the big next shakeup, and it's already happening. And there's no one really argues with that, I don't think. But then you're talking about revenue cycle management inside of dental. It is a hot mess. Everybody's trying to figure out where their money is coming from when, and it's hard because insurance has come in at different times. Maybe it could have been from 2 months ago. Patients pay later. You have in-house payment plans versus credit cards. So it's a big mess, and it's hard to get actual numbers inside of dental offices. And then you broke down that into four sections. Could you give those one more time for me?
Yeah, sure, Ken. So, one of those sections is payments. The second section is going into the area of financing. The third section is claims processing. And the fourth section is insurance verification.
Okay. And so what are your thoughts on those? Like, where is that going?
Yeah. So I think right now, there's emerging players in each of those buckets. I think it would be nice if some of them were cross-compatible versus a provider, the dental office, how frequent is it that we each have to have, four, six, eight different systems to complete one process end to end? So I think interoperability or compatibility among those technologies, I think, is one key.
Is anybody doing that though? Because I'll tell you from my side. So for marketing, we have this dashboard and we can actually track cost per lead, like an actual opportunity, cost per acquisition to actually drive the patient into the door. How much did it cost you to do that? And then we can measure phone conversion and lifetime value. We're the only ones that I know that can actually tie the dollar that you spent that turned into this patient spending this much money over a lifetime. But that's only one piece of the pie. Then you need to track all this other stuff. So I work with all these other great companies and they're all awesome, but they all have their own dashboards too. Right. And so I always joke and I'm like, who has this much time to log into all these separate things with separate passwords and make this all work? No one. Like, it doesn't exist. You can't do your chat and your phones and then your marketing and then et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that's just marketing. I haven't got into the inside the practice and all those kind of things. And what you're describing is actually just one section inside of the office. So do you see this, someone solving that right now or no?
In discrete ways, there are some companies that have, addressed parts of that. So, you can look at some of the biggest data and analytics companies in dental, right? Dental Intel and Jarvis Analytics, and they are tying together and the like in that category are tying together a lot of you know, key performance indicators, KPIs, or other metrics. But to your point, you know, they probably don't have everything.
If the data is bad in, it's bad back out.
If the data is bad in,
no one's talking about.
Exactly. The data is bad back out. So that's an issue. The other issue is all these other companies creating their dashboard as a service and not necessarily, playing with other dashboards. So you're right. There's a few issues on the just pure data and analytics side of it. I do think that there are some companies that do the matchback pretty well. So Simplify being an example there. I think they've done a really nice job of being able to capture somebody with their live chat on the front end, schedule them into the schedule. That patient actually shows up, and assuming that they're integrated with the practice management system, you know, every time that patient even successively comes back, they can really report those numbers back to the practice. Yeah. But again, it's, you know, horizontally.
Where did that patient come from?
They came just through their chat feature on the website, right? This is just one way that the practice is sourcing their patients.
So you still don't have phones, you still don't have online scheduler. And then even if you did have all of that, where did that patient come from?
Right.
Because we use Simplified on a lot of our sites. So it's like, we track some of that data, and it's like, if you don't know where did they come because their friend referred them, because of your location, or because your marketing dollar,
right?
And those are drastically different outcomes and also can perform differently. So and again, even though it's awesome that they can do that, it's still, there's so many missing parts from all ends of it. And somebody needs to bring that together. And it sounds like on the financial side, there's still a lot of opportunity there. So payments, financing, claims, and then insurance verification. Are you guys working with companies inside of each of those buckets right now?
Yeah. So, you know, first of all, to your previous points, you're right. You'd need an attribution engine, right? You'd need, Google Analytics has one, HubSpot has one, and there's a lot of, you know, attribution engines that just are attribution engines that can help you track where a lead is from on your website. So that's one piece. In terms of companies in the dental space that are providing a bunch of those different, maybe not all, but a good number of those different breakdowns of the RCM cycle, the revenue cycle management, component. I would say that, you know, the medium to larger tier now companies like Rectangle Health or Vine are starting to, you know, edge their way into really looking at all four pieces there. So that's definitely, you know, those are a couple of providers. Yeah, to your point, we're also looking at the smaller startups, right? Because there are some that are uniquely providing, you know, some skill sets in each one of those four areas that, because they're focused on that specific solve, they've done it really uniquely. Now that comes with the problem of fragmentation, but it does also potentially provide a really good core product there.
You can at least piece something together, right? You can start to piece something together if you have that piece because it was missing before.
Right.
I totally agree with you. Where do you think, like, pie in the sky, right? So I'll start with this. I look at like Ethereum and platforms like that, and I go, I can see how someday we won't need a real estate agent. We will have a smart contract, and I want to buy your house, and you put all the terms legally because it's already built into the smart contract of what has to happen. And I put the money in, and then once all those terms are met, the money swaps and the deed of the house swaps, and then you have 2 weeks to move out, right? And it's like, you removed that process. Same with insurance. We could have the same thing with an insurance provider where you're like, okay, I've funded this smart contract and I'm covered. And if anything happens, then somebody else kicks in money from the insurance side. And if all these boxes are checked, so we can see how those kind of things could happen, right? And how that technology is really going to change the landscape of payment processing or agreements that we have on a daily basis that are really muddied down with just needless processes. What's your vision, not today, but in 10, 20 years, how is that going to impact the dental industry?
Yeah. So I think a few different things, right? So starting in each of those buckets, you see in the financing bucket, right? The players like Choice Payment Systems, right? Coming up, and doing something different, the walnuts, right? You see in the insurance verification bucket, the AirPays, the Zoobs, you know, the Tooth Fairies popping out. You see in the payments bucket, the Simplifies bucket.
you see in the claims processing bucket, the Zentists popping out, right? When I think of all those types of players, there's a few ways that they come together, right? One of the ways that they come together is acquisition by strategic, right? Literally somebody buys them and puts them together.
Yeah.
Right. Another way that they come together is through a practice management system integration, mm-hmm. right? Where a practice management system or some or all practice management systems, you know, put them together, or offices go around a practice management system to have a more, you know, unified experience, right? So I look at Tanner Applegate's Unify, or I look at Brian Laskin's Tooth Apps, right? And they have, you know, different systems to help be an aggregator,
yeah.
essentially.
Yep.
So those are some options. I love your reference to Third Web there, right? I do think that the blockchain is probably, you know, the futuristic way that, you know, value in technology and integration in technology is probably traded. I think smart contracts are a good form for this. I don't think enough people understand, you know, enough to have real conviction or trust it. I think some people got burned in crypto and you know, and carry that loss over to here. I think I'd even push it a step further. I think we're going to see, right, this is the technology side that we're talking about. The whole other side of the industry, right, is the practice side. Mm-hmm. Not to take the conversation over there, but it's easier to have the two interact when they're on the same platform, right? Mm. Whether that's the aggregator or that's the, you know, that's the practice management system, or in this case, what if there's a DAO DSO, right? So if you have a DAO DSO already leveraged.
Can you describe a DAO just for people on here if they're not familiar with it?
Yeah. So a DAO is essentially a way for, you know, a practice to leverage some or all of its ownership across multiple different types of investors that can trade in, you know, direct, you know, monetary value and or value in their own assets, say their own practice leveraged against it. It's effectively kind of a trading platform in this case for a dental practice.
So walk me down that road, a DAO DSO. So you and I are going to start a DAO DSO. What does that look like?
Yeah. So I think, you know, and it depends if you, you know, how de novo you go about it. But the idea being, you know, you look for practices with a like mind that can understand Third Web, that are willing to leverage the value against where the market is willing to take it. You find investors that are similarly willing to, you know, or you're exposing it to the world of investors, right? Effectively, to come in and with smart contracts have their value or their share in it. So you have this structure that is owned across, you know, basically the way that the blockchain works, right? Instead of it being owned by, you know, the way a DSO is currently structured is professional corporations that feed into a management company, right? That now the DAO DSO has that management company leveraged on, you know, effectively on this blockchain-like environment where multiple people can have value in it and be able to support it with more value over time, right? So it's not this typical recap process where they have to, you know, once every couple of years, go back to the private equity funds, recap everything. Right. Instead, they have a different source of capital that they're able to leverage against the market success. So, you know, I think it's really interesting if you have not only the practice, in a DAO structure, but also the technology. Right. So then the interplay between the two becomes much, much, much easier. You could even have a world where the same owner of the practice also owns a piece of the technology, right? Today, the way that we think of a DSO is one where you just own all or a piece of the walls, right? You own the walls of the practice, right? But nobody owns what's inside. Why is that, right? Think about your home. If I'm using my AirPods and I'm using my Apple computer and I'm using my Apple phone and my Apple watch, maybe I should buy some stock in Apple, right? I don't just own a piece of the company that I'm working for with all my Apple products. I also own a piece of the Apple products.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. And so it makes that world of dual ownership, you know, far easier.
I love that. And so one of the things you brought up there, one of the options or roads that you said was a PMS or something like a PMS could end up integrating with everybody and saying, okay, we're all going to play ball. And this practice management system is actually going to be a practice management system that you can leverage and use and read and actually build the reporting that you want. why hasn't that happened yet? Because it's, to me, it's clear that that's like what it should be, but there's roadblocks there somewhere that I'm not, you know, I'm not smart enough to figure out. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, there's a lot of roadblocks and certain players doing it different ways, right? Obviously, Open Dental is open. You have some players that are operating in the cloud. You have some that are operating on local servers of dental offices and some that are doing both, you know, to an extent with their different products and different versions. You know, look, it's a tough and complex competitive landscape there, right? The big companies own also the distribution business, as well as the PMS business, as well as the equipment servicing bit. So, you know, it's when they have you locked into two or three of those components, you know, you're kind of locked into the third because it makes the most sense, but, you know, because of your use of the other two, but also because of pricing. So I think, you know, offices often find themselves, you know, having to argue convenience and functionality over, you know, structure and cost.
Yeah.
And so I think that's a, you know, dangerous landscape.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say the other issue is the APIs, right? You know, I wouldn't necessarily say that the, you know, main PMS, you know, providers are, you know, super either resourced to produce their own internal features. Some have, right? Like a care stack, right? You know, has, you know, a number of different services, you know, within it, like a Tab 32 has a number of different services within it, but some don't, right? And they have different levels of integration available. But even those APIs, they're not necessarily fully open. Some of them cost a lot of money for the companies to integrate with. And some of them are, you know, sort of areas that the PMS are not willing to, you know, meet halfway on because they do have some of their own products there and it would be competitive. So, you know, there are a couple of roadblocks there that make it hard. I think Open Dental is probably the closest to what we're talking about, but you know, I still think, you know, now you have a closer tie to a distributor there too. So, you know, it gets complicated in the world of competition.
Yep. And then one of the things that I've noticed inside of dental too, is that, and it's true everywhere, right? We hear AI all the time. It's like AI, everything, right? Everything's AI. Not everything is AI. And we're not, sometimes we're further along in certain areas and sometimes it's smoke and mirrors. Like, it's like, no, that wasn't AI. That was somebody pushing a button back there, right? Like, what are your thoughts on AI and where we're at with that inside of dental?
Yeah, AI, artificial intelligence, become this loaded term, you know, to an extent, right? First of all, most people don't know the difference between AI, machine learning, computer vision, right? Natural language processing. There's actually a few different types of technologies. Secondly, I think, you know, because of the rising of radiographic diagnostic assistance, everybody in dental has been sort of, you know, trained due to marketing to think, you know, the minute that they think AI, they think image recognition on, you know, in a radiograph. And AI actually can provide a lot of different functions, you know, from analyzing your chart data to analyzing your call data to analyzing your office operations and telling you what is the best decision, right? Or even how equipment is functioning on a day-to-day basis. AI can be deployed in a lot of different spaces across dental to be really helpful. So I think it's become a very, very loaded term. Within image, you know, within the AI that we all think of, right, radiographic diagnostic assistance, it's exciting to see, right? You've had the rise of Overjet, Pearl, VideaHealth, Denti AI, and a wide variety of others, you know, that have come out and looked at 2D radiographic diagnostic assistance. You're seeing now FDA approvals start to come through, which is exciting. There are some DSO and insurer relationships that have evolved, which, you know, are starting to connect the right pieces between the patient, the payer, and the provider.
Touch on that. So that's like, is that like when I go to my insurance for my home insurance and my car, and they're like, hey, Gary, if you put your home and your car here, we can actually give you a discount because we can protect you better or whatever. There's reasons and laws around that. Is it like that, or is it a little bit different than that?
Yeah, insurance is an interesting example because they have some carriers have multiple different types of policies. I almost even, you know, taking it a step higher level because I think it's still pretty young and early in dental, it's more along the lines of if I come into a dental, we do this crazy thing in dental offices. I pitch this business model sometimes to other people without calling it dentistry, and they think I'm really crazy, right? And then I tell them I'm a dentist. and then they really feel bad, right? But you know, I tell them, hey, look, we have customers that come in. We provide some procedures, you know, on them. They typically pay us for those procedures. We're pretty sure we're going to get that reimbursement. And then we tell them, we pitch them on these other, you know, 3, 4, 5, 10, 15 things, whatever the patient needs. And then we send them away for 2 to 3 weeks while we figure out, you know, how much their insurance is actually going to pay, where they're at in their accumulator, what's actually covered or not covered, you know, how we're going to process these claims, what system is going to be best to have them pay on, right? We send them away while we figure out all these pieces, where we're going to schedule them in and with who. And then we try to see if we can get them to come back in 3 weeks, right? Instead of right, getting the patient going at the point of care, yeah. Right? And that just doesn't really make much sense. So, you know, where I see AI coming into play is, you know, if the insurers, for example, the payers can get enough confidence around the AI and its algorithms to trust it, then maybe we can have some blanket prior authorizations here. Right. Maybe we can say that, hey, the AI has calculated, you know, this is going to qualify for SRP, scaling root planing in X quadrants. Right. Or that is, you know what, that carry has extended to the point where we are going to cover, you know, the filling or the crown in this case. Or there is clearly widening of the periodontal ligament and, you know, and or an infection, you know, at the bottom of the tooth at the root. So, you know, this is clearly going to be covered for root canal therapy. Right. Can we gain enough conviction around the AI to trust it to make maybe not all the decisions, but some of the decisions on the spot? So that if we have, like we previously talked about the RCM bits, if we are able to automate the insurance processing, the insurance verification and claims processing, and we have the AI deployed to give us that prior authorization, then maybe we can actually run the process through in a zip and not have to send the patient away for a few months. So I think if these technologies can kind of come in and work together and enough of the right stakeholders can gain confidence around them, it could be a much better experience for the patient and the practice.
Yeah, for everybody. From a business standpoint, the other way of doing it is just, it's horrible. And it's also not best for the patient. The patient doesn't want to wait. And so, yeah, if you could get that approved in layman's terms, just get approval instantly because the AI sees it and the insurance company believes them because now it's removing the doctor from the process of confirming it, right? The doctor's still there doing the work, then the insurance company feels comfortable. That's genius. And so you said that there's already DSOs and AI working on that. There's people who are working on things like that.
Yeah, there are a couple of the AI companies, you know, have definitely started to form bridges with the insurers. And they're also there.
What's the advantage to the insurer? Why would the insurance? Because normally the insurance are the bad guys, right? For the dental industry, it's like, oh, the insurances are bad. But what's the business side of it for the insurer?
Yeah. So it goes to the best use of AI, right? AI is, its best use is not helping you to identify the massive issues that are clearly visible to the eye, right? We can all tell if a tooth is quote unquote bombed out.
Yeah.
Right. We know if it has huge caries, right? It's very visible on the X-ray immediately. The AI is really best at catching things that are progressing slowly over time that are, you know, maybe not as obvious to the eye, right? Getting that sensitivity and specificity right. Now that's key to the insurer because this is the ability to catch and stop something early before it ends up getting more costly.
So it's preventative care. It just goes to preventative care, right? So it's instead before this patient is in pain and they're going to come in and then use their insurance for this root canal, we're catching it way earlier in the process. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. Is there an incipient lesion, the start of decay that we can, you know, deploy the AI to find and then arrest the caries or take care of it as a small restoration before it's a crown, right? Is there a little bit of widening of the PDL, periodontal ligament? And do we believe that that's progressed over time? We think that that could be an infection developing. And what can we do about that right now, right? Before, you know, before it evolves into something bigger. Maybe the patient needs SRP, right? Maybe they need something else, you know, but stop it before it gets into an infection that the patient, you know, now has to have a course of antibiotics for. They may end up going into the ER. They have to have a number of different procedures to try to save the tooth or replace the tooth. So I think the real value to them is that. The other value is, and here's a little secret that most people don't know, you know, we all as dentists send our images into the insurer thinking it's going to help kind of defend our case when we want them to cover something. The insurers don't read x-rays in current state of the mind. They do not read your x-ray unless there's an appeal or there's a, you know, it gets pulled for quality.
They're using averages and things like that, right?
That's right. They are not looking at the x-rays that you send in, right? It isn't going anywhere. So, you know, generally speaking, you now have AI can read a lot of images, right? And so it actually, I think, could help in that capacity where there is evidence, you know, that the dentist feels is rightfully there. You now have something that has the bandwidth to actually read it. Don't think that there's a room of tons of humans that are opening up every x-ray every dentist sends into the insurance company reading them. It doesn't exist.
That's awesome. So this might push the insurance conversation back in the other direction, because I know a lot of people, again, look at the insurance as the bad guy. But if something like this was able to wedge in between, I think that, you know, we could see some changes or see things in a different light that would really help the patient, help the practice, and put the insurance in a position to do a lot of good there. So I love that. I love when technology is able to do that and really help people bridge that trust. So we talked about fintech. We talked about the RCM. We also talked about some other technologies. What are some things that you're really excited about in the future outside of those topics that we already covered?
Yeah, I think there's a few really heavily emerging spaces. One of them is, I'm going to broadly call it the digital workflow, right? Everything that's kind of along the continuum of scan, intraoral scan, plan, like treatment plan, print, like 3D print, and then deliver. Right. I think this concept of the digital workflow, the digital lab is becoming very, very expansive and robust within dentistry. It's a big one from the most front end facing, you know, capacities where you're selling the patient on their smile design all the way through, you know, each and every step of the way to even delivering that prosthetic. Right, taking the images, doing the planning, so creating the
basically
SDL
it's removing
files,
all the middlemen. Right, it's just putting it into you and the patient, basically.
That's right, and sometimes there is, you know, still a lab in that loop. Right, they provide a very critical and sophisticated function in the middle that we don't all have, you know, in house. We don't always have a denturist or, you know, somebody who can actually, you know, be a lab tech in house. And some of us as providers, as I've learned, you know, they want to be, you know, have things in-house, right? So I think in the ortho space, braces on demand, right? Can I manufacture my own brackets the way I want, right? In my print them right in my office to my own specs and do it cost effectively, right? $60 instead of $260. Or, you know, on the other hand, do I have to have everything go out of the house? Right. And there are a lot of folks that like to have everything go out of hand and we want to see a 3D printer in my office. Right. And that's okay too. But the process should still be digital. Right. It is much faster, much higher quality, much more cost effective if the process is digital. So that continuum, which has also a lot of fragmentation within it, is really important. And instead of integrations, well, there could be integrations into the practice management system, but here you're really talking about integrations into printers, integrations into imaging software.
So it's right? the same thing we talked about before. It's getting everything to work together is the hard part.
That's right. There's a lot of steps, you know, in that process from selling the patient on their smile to delivering that prosthetic all digitally. You know, that is, you know, or appliance, not just prosthetic. That there's a lot of steps in there. But that is a very heavily focused on space in dentistry right now that is set to be a big one. I think another big one is the area of, I'll call it, you know, broadly microbiome. So it's all of the living things in your mouth, okay, right? And how they affect our health, right? So on the one hand, it's getting the consumer knowledgeable and educated what is going on in your mouth. Right? What's in your saliva, right? Why is that important? In the middle, it's a true diagnostic. You know, here are the 500 bacteria in your mouth. Here are the five bad actors and what they're doing, right? And then on the back end, it's a, you know, it's a therapeutic, right? A customized potentially solution that says, here's how we're going to resolve that in your mouth, Gary.
So that would be right? Like whitening issues or bad breath or like things more along those lines?
Even more specific, it's saying, you know, you have too much P. gingivalis, which causes periodontitis, we need to eradicate it. So here's a therapeutic that eradicates it. Or your bacteria is
offset.
You can
do that from home probably, right? They could probably take a strip spit thing and send it in and get that back, right?
Yeah. I mean, potentially you'd want to have, you know, provider oversight to make sure that the steps are matching what's also physically being done in your mouth. But in general, you know, it's not good enough today to tell people you have bacteria in your mouth, you need to brush your teeth with toothpaste, use one with fluoride, and you know that's going to solve all your problems. That's not providing any value. Brush your teeth with fluoride. Like, you know, yes, we need to continue to educate about fluoride, right? But we need solutions that right now, right? There's a lot. There's a market of one size fits all toothpaste. The custom fit toothpaste or those that provide whitening or bad breath or sensitivity. That's not enough.
Yeah, and strawberry flavor.
We need to see differentiated toothpaste that have real, molecular level, chemical level technology to really help somebody.
So that would be like a prescription, right? So you would be like, here's what you need, and they would make you a special toothpaste to deal with that problem that you're facing.
Yeah, some, depending on the regulatory process, some are prescription, some could be over the counter here. But directing to people to something that's a little bit more than a marketing claim, right? Bad breath and whitening, you know, it's very general, right? We need to have something that, the problem in the mouth, is the etiology of the problem is typically bacterial, right? Or if it's not, it's something else that needs to be resolved. So there are specific, cocktails that can be delivered. There can be ones that loosen calculus from your teeth if you have calculus. There are ones that can eradicate certain bad bacteria or reset the good bacteria against the bad bacteria. But it starts with the consumer being knowledgeable and motivated, having a true and real picture of what's going on in the mouth, and then getting the patient to the right thing, not just aimlessly sending them down the halls of Walmart or the search bar of Amazon. It's not good enough.
That is awesome. So this has been a really, really fun podcast. This is great stuff. And I love the direction that you guys are going. How can people find you and reach out to you, whether they have an idea for a business or they're starting a business and they want help with that, or if they want to invest, how do people reach out to you?
Yeah. Best way to reach us is at info@reverepartnersvc.com. That's R-E-V-E-R-E, partners, VC, VictorCharlie.com.
Awesome. Thanks so much for tuning in. You have a great day.
Thanks, Gary.